Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome back to All the Small Things. I'm Venetia and I am so excited to be bringing you this conversation with Paris Leese. Paris Leese is a writer, presenter and the first openly trans person to be a contributing editor for Vogue. She has just released her debut book, What It Feels Like for a Girl, which is an unmissable coming-of-age memoir following the story of Byron Leese growing up on a council estate in a dead-end town in the East Midlands. It's written in an evocative vernacular style with an utterly immersive depiction of early noughties culture. Here's a short extract of the audiobook performed by Paris to give you a taste.
When we come out, I went to the edge of the castle and looked down the cliff edge. Not very good at working out heights, but let's just say we're a long way down. They built these posh houses into the cliffs, but they just look like dolls' houses from up there. A bit further along, there's a cave that Uncle Roger used to live in during one of his episodes. I climbed onto the wall and stood up. Max tried to grab me, but I told him to let go or I'd jump. Said I'd be all right if he just left me alone. I was terrified, but it felt great. I don't know what it is about heights. I'm scared of them. Dead scared. But I'm not scared of falling. I'm scared of jumping. Because whenever I'm high up, I get this overwhelming urge to just leap off. I'm not suicidal. I don't want to die all right. It's just knowing that you can. How easy it'd be to do it. And how something so simple, so instant, can have the power to change your life forever. And sitting on the edge of Liam's bed, looking at that gun, I feel exactly the same way as I did on the edge of that cliff. All right then, Liam, I go. Let's do it.
Now, the book is not always an easy read, as Paris's adolescence was highly dramatic with periods of bullying, a troubled home life, rebellion, sexual abuse, and crime. This book is an addictively readable debut, and it cements Paris as one of the UK's most exciting young writers. Please do check out the episode notes to order yourself a copy. I promise you will not be disappointed. In this episode, we talk about Paris's writing process, how well the memoir would lend itself to television, the traumatic process of looking back, sexual abuse, her time in a young offenders institution, self-care, and more. Please be aware that this is quite an emotional episode and there's some strong language in there too. Here is Paris Leese on All the Small Things. I would love to hear about whether or not you have some semblance of a morning routine or habits that you try and stick to every day.
The only real habit that I would say that I've stuck to consistently is I'm a big breakfast person. I do like breakfast, and weirdly, so I go through phases, and I think in lockdown I've been having a lot of food that reminds me of when I was a kid. Right. I think particularly as well, because I've been revisiting that world with my book. And I think a lot of people have been reaching for comfort food. Right. So there's been a lot of fish finger sandwiches and like Heinz tomato soup, obviously not for breakfast. But so in this context, I've been having Rice Krispies for breakfast this week.
Also, Heinz tomato soup, I don't know about you, but that was always the thing that if ever I had a cold or I was under the weather, that is the thing that I always wanted.
It's, am I allowed to swear on this?
Of course.
It's fucking tasty. Like, it's so fucking tasty. I'd love to say it was like avocado toast or something, but it's It's Kellogg's.
I think let's make Kellogg's a Vogue girl breakfast. I think let's just put that high up on the list.
Now I'm getting really paranoid, and I'm like, because I have this like big imposter syndrome. So Giles Hattersley, my editor, called me up a few years ago. Like it must have been like 2 years ago now, and my heart was racing, and I was like, I know what this is. They've had a team meeting, and somebody's put a view forward and said, you know, Paris is not actually Vogue. And everybody's gone, oh, yeah, no, she's not Vogue, is she? And I thought he was calling me to say, we've made a mistake. We're very sorry, but we don't ever want you to write for us again or for you to be associated with the brand. Actually, he was calling me to ask me if I wanted to interview Emma Watson for the cover. So now I'm thinking, oh my God, I've said that I eat Rice Krispies for breakfast. I will wake up and my name will not be littered at the front of the magazine anymore. This will keep me up at night tonight.
I'm so sorry for playing a part in that. That's also such an incredible story. Next time I have severe imposter syndrome, which happens a lot, I might just remind myself of that story to make me feel better. That's incredible. Thank you for sharing
it. It doesn't make me feel better, but yeah. No, interviewing Emma Watson was amazing. But yes, I am. I'm neurotic, as you will see throughout the course of this podcast, I imagine.
Oh, okay. I'll keep an eye out for that. But yeah, let us dive in to talking about your incredible debut book, What It Feels Like for a Girl. Paris, it's a masterpiece. It is so, so fantastic. And it's actually not necessarily what I think a lot of people might be expecting from you. So perhaps you would like to tell our listeners a little bit about it and how it feels to finally have it out there after, is it 7 or 8 years that you've been writing it?
7 years, and I think seven's a magical number, and it's sort of that's sort of like your teenage years as well, isn't it? So there's this mirroring of the 7 year period that the book covers essentially, and the 7 years that it took me to write it, which have both been really intense, important sort of distinct periods of my life. There's just this really weird twinning, if that makes sense. And it's like both things I'm closing a door on again. And it's incredibly emotional. But for people who don't know what it's about, What It Feels Like for a Girl is about growing up poor and desperately unhappy on a council estate in the noughties, desperately wanting to escape. You know, I would have done anything to escape. And as you know, because you've read it, did do anything to escape. I've come to realize actually through the writing of this that I was an escapologist. I just wanted to escape, and I did it through books. I did it through music. I did it through drink, drugs, sex, putting myself in increasingly dangerous situations, and I had a lot of fun, but also got into quite a bit of trouble, I think it's fair to say as well. And that's what my book's about. And it's it's interesting because one of the reviews that I saw was saying, you know, I hesitate to praise a trans memoir for being thin on sort of trans content, but it was really refreshingly, you know, she doesn't go on about it. And it's like, well, that's because it's not a trans memoir. And I never said it was. You said that it was, the person that was commenting. And it's just interesting to me that I think some people, that is what they're expecting from me. But I hope that people who've been following me for years will know that it's, I wanted to write a good story, you know, and I've had an interesting life, I think it's fair to say. Yeah. And yes, of course, being trans is part of that, but I'm sorry, anybody listening to this who's watching a trans memoir, that's not what I've written. There is some stuff in there because I am trans and I can't write a book about my life in which I don't mention that. But really, this is a coming of age story. You know, it's about the difficulty of growing up and fighting for acceptance and fighting to be who you are or who you want to be, you know, because you don't know who you are at that age, really.
So much happens to you in that 7 year period, but the way you've structured the book
is super concise. I personally see every chapter as a short essay. You can kind of read them as standalone pieces, and I love that. I also love how they're named after songs. Can you talk us through why you decided to structure it in this way?
Thank you so much for asking this question. And can I just say, it is so lovely to be at this stage where I know what I've been trying to do with this book, right? And I've been working on it for like 7 years. And so to be at the stage where people are saying, oh yeah, it was effective and it did that thing that you wanted it to do, is like just amazing. And absolutely, you know, my background is writing essentially essays, you know, comment pieces, first person pieces, you know, for online and for magazines. And I sort of, it was a way of me doing it, was thinking, okay, we're going to do this chapter by chapter. Originally, it was sort of all over the place, and it started with the voice, and I knew that I had all of these anecdotes and funny stories and things and shocking experiences as well. And it was going to be much more freeform. I think like 2 years into the process, I was like, this needs some structure, actually. Hello, structure, like structure it like a classic three-act structure. So you know, this is my story, but I was looking and thinking, okay, is there sort of a timeline where the events of my life will fit quite neatly onto a sort of, you know, classic structure that you would use for a novel or a TV script or something? And it did, you know. And I think I felt that I could tell a really, really distinct, discrete story at a certain time and place, with a, you know, beginning, a problem, a middle, escalating conflict, and a sort of resolution at the end. And I really wanted the reader to enjoy this book, because a book really needs to be good, you know, if I'm going to sit down, because it's quite a commitment to sit down with a book. And we're in this sort of attention economy now, and I was like, I want you to really enjoy every part of this. And I just think, for me, when I read autobiographies, and it's like, and then this happened and then that happened, because not all parts of your life are as equally enjoyable, and not all of the interesting things happen in the order that it would flow in the way if you were reading fiction. And my big thing is fiction. I read literature at university, and that's just what I enjoy reading. And I really enjoy those voice-led pieces, like The Colour Purple, like Paddy Clark, Ha Ha Ha, like Train Spotting, and all of those little books like, you know, Lady Chatterley's Lover and Wuthering Heights, where they've got those regional dialects in there as part of, you know, dialogue and characters that have the accents, and those things always really stood out to me as being really evocative and vibrant. And I thought, well, let's just do a whole book in Nottingham dialect, because I don't really think it's been done before.
One of my favourite things about the book is just how rich the cultural references are, especially as I'm someone who grew up in the early noughties. So the music and fashion references that you make really just took me back. You've created such a vivid world. Was that part of it really fun?
Yeah, and I loved it. And this is the thing, you know, I got a book deal with Penguin, and I was able to tell my story. And I thought, well, this is great. I'm not writing for a newspaper or magazine to their sort of, you know, I can make this what I want. So I just wanted to make it like all of those wonderful things. And obviously, growing up feeling very unhappy because I've been bullied, because I was unhappy at home and had a really difficult relationship with my parents, I was really drawn to those sort of immersive experiences, right? And I think that the artists that we tend to really fall in love with are people who create those otherworldly experiences, you know. So the real, you know, the old icons, like, I don't know, like David Bowie or Madonna, mm-hmm. You know, they tend to have a sort of creative vision that you can just lose yourself in. And I feel like a bit of a fraud in a sense, because somebody else was saying, you know, you've created this universe, but really I've recreated a universe. You know, that was my life. version of events at that time. You know, that was my experience of the world. You know, other people may have really been into, you know, indie music and Britpop. You know, it's definitely a specific point of view of, you know, growing up on a particular council estate at a particular time, you know, being a particular type of person. Also, there are those universal experiences there, and it was so fun. And I was going back looking at old photos and thinking, what was I wearing? And some of the scenes where I describe what I'm wearing, I'm actually looking at photos, you know, and literally describing the outfits, and I remember wearing them as well. And I feel like I've made a culture soup. Yes. Right, like, because I love cooking, yeah. And the thing with the soup, you can make a soup really simple with just like an onion and some stock and some vegetables. But you can also, you know, add cheese, or you can add herbs, and you can add a bit of sherry. You can add cream. You know, you can sort of make it as rich as you want it to be. And I love rich foods, and I love books that are rich, and I wanted it to be really tasty for the reader, you know. I wanted it to be really full of anecdotes and jokes and little things that make you go, oh, I remember that, and I had that pencil case, and, you know, it was a lot of fun, and it's really satisfying to see that people are enjoying it on that level.
I hope this doesn't take away from the achievement of the book in itself, but it did make me think, have you created it with a view of potentially turning it into a CV series or a film one day? Because I just, it would lend itself so well to that, you know, talking about, you know, looking back at those pictures and writing up your outfits based on what you were wearing. In my mind, I'm like, oh, I just want to see all these images in front of me in the way that you, you know, experience them.
Well, I'm a very visually minded person, actually. And I sent over a really detailed mood board, for instance, with lots of noughties references like Moloko and Basement Jacks and all those bands that I loved growing up, to Penguin. And the designer, Tom Etherington, is just fantastic. And he's actually from the Midlands, which is just doubly fabulous. And he totally got the aesthetic and the sort of visual world that I was trying to create there. I absolutely wrote this with the scenes in my mind. And what you were saying about, you know, the chapters feeling like individual essays. I mean, I'm also quite influenced by Alan Bennett and sort of monologues. And they're absolutely monologues, you know. So in my mind, it is a book, and I'm proud of it as a book. But that's only one part of the project, because this absolutely has to be developed for screen or stage somewhere, you know. I hope somebody will pick it up, or, you know, if the worst comes to the worst, I will put it on down the local pub or something, you know. But it's meant to be performed. I performed the audiobook, you know, it is a performance. It's quite dialogue heavy in places. You know, I'm really trying to paint a scene. There's real scenes that it builds up to. And as I say, it follows that sort of three act structure. So, and the music as well, this came from it. So, originally, I'd created a playlist to help put me back in that time and place. And then I started assigning individual songs to particular chapters. So each chapter had its own song to help me create a shape of the book in my mind, so that when I'm, you know, exercising or tidying up, I can listen to the music and think, okay, so this is that chapter, and it gets sadder, and then this bit's energy, and then this bit's angry. And I also put them into sort of chronological order as well. So, you know, we're starting them sort of like 2001, and we're sort of ending in sort of like 2006, 2007, something like that. So, you know, Y2K to sort of like mid to late noughties. And so it was really complicated, and I obsessed over it. It sounds obsessive, right? And it was, but I've got it all planned out in my head. This is the music for this scene. So there's a very, 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 very sad scene, and I've called the chapter "Barber's Adagio for Strings," which is the William Orbit version, which I think actually was from a few years before. It was like from the 90s, but it was, you know, it's music that you could have heard in the clubs or on the radio, or that was around, you know, at that time, and that's the music that's playing in the scene when they develop it, as far as I'm concerned. And I would absolutely like to have a really hands-on role in developing it for film or TV, but who knows?
I do think it's when you're talking about it, it does sound a bit obsessive, but in the best possible way, because the payoff is just so fantastic. So, and also, oh, yeah, like, you've made the people who will put, I'm sure, take this onto other formats, like, you've made their job just even more enjoyable and easier and more fun and everything else. So I just think, I think the payoff will just be fantastic and already is in the book. Now let's talk a little bit about one of the kind of big events of the book, because I learned that the pandemic wasn't your first experience of being locked down, because in the book I learned that you were in prison at a young offenders institution. That time must have felt very, very scary. I'd love to hear a little bit about that time and how you kind of got through it, really, and whether or not there were things that you brought into your daily routine to really help you through that time.
It's so interesting that you should ask that, because I've been thinking quite a lot, actually, about when I was inside during lockdown, because my housemate went to go and stay with his girlfriend. So I've been on my own for huge chunks of time, right? Which I haven't minded, because I'm a writer, so I'm living in my own head anyway. And it's interesting to me, because I'm like, what was worse? You know, being in one room by yourself, or, you know, at the time it was the worst thing in the world to me, but actually I did have friends in there, and it gave me some time to think and process things and think about the sort of life that I wanted to have when I came out of there. So it's like so many things in the book, it's not clear cut. Some people were kind to me when I was in prison, and honestly, in many ways, I feel like I had more kindness there than I've experienced in some quarters of the British media, actually, which is very hostile towards trans people, sadly, in 2021. And I just find that very interesting. And I wanted to write openly and honestly about that it was horrendous. And I literally felt like I was going to die. I just thought my heart was going to stop beating. I didn't think that I could survive for 8 months in prison. But I did. And it's very surreal to look back on it now and think, really? You went to prison? I mean, it was young offenders, you know, and I was a kid, you know. It was just, it's really weird looking back on it now, because it's almost like it's a different person, which is why I've written the book in the style that it is. You know, these things happened to me, but I've almost sort of come to think of that period of my life as almost like it was somebody else, if that makes any kind of sense.
No, totally. I think that makes perfect sense. And it makes me think more about the process of how that process must have been for you, revisiting all of these things that you went through in that time, feeling so different to that person back then. Having gone through all of that, and I know you've written a lot about kind of the therapy that you've had and what it's taken to get you back into that time and through it again, how do you feel about this character and this person that, you know, feel so far removed from you now that you've revisited everything?
Can I just quickly grab something to show you, and then I'm going to respond?
Yes.
So I'm going to show you something. So this isn't to be shown online or anything, but I got these photos out recently, which they've been under my mum's bed for like 10, 15 years. And look.
Oh my gosh. Oh, wow.
So that's me when I was like 14, 15. And I don't show these, right? Because I just think it's a bit trashy. And I think it annoys me the way that the sort of media reduces trans people to a sort of like a cheap before and after shot, you know? And it's like, what do you really look like? What did you look like before, kind of thing? And I don't like that narrative, but I don't mind showing, you know, you, and I don't mind showing friends and family. But and also it's, I think actually, this is the one that really gets me.
Oh, wow.
This is the one that really gets me, because this was taken on holiday, and it was either taken by my mum or my auntie, and I'm just wearing, you know, a little pair of pants in this. But it's, you know, it's taken with loving family eyes. But this is the body that we're talking about in this book. And I think this person's a child.
Yeah.
And to actually see that and think there are men out there that took advantage of that really vulnerable young person and wanted to pay that person and, you know, do things that they shouldn't have been doing. It really breaks my heart, actually. And I want to sort of go back and give that person a hug and say, you poor baby, you know, please, please, please look after yourself. Everything's going to be all right. You're okay. You know, you don't have to do this. You're worth more than this. And just please, please be safe. And maybe that's weird to talk about myself in the third person like that, but it's almost been like a therapeutic device of facing what my life was like at that time with the sort of wisdom of, you know, being a grown up and, the insight of, you know, making sense of what that all meant. And I'm just trying to be a bit kinder to the younger version of myself and also just feeling very, very sad that we know that there are vulnerable kids around the world and up and down the country who are vulnerable to these sort of predatory older men. And we know that LGBT kids are highly vulnerable. And it just breaks my heart thinking, you know, who is this happening to today? And the other profound quote, because I've been signing the books. So we had like 2,000 signed copies and about half of them I made sort of individual. Some of them were song lyrics, some of them were quotations and stuff. And some of them were a bit more profound. And in one of them I wrote, there are other people with stories like this to tell, who are not here to tell them now. And it's just very emotional. It's very, 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 very emotional.
Mm. When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
One of the most interesting themes of the book is definitely class and also escapism. You mentioned earlier feeling like an escapologist. Do you think perhaps you kind of anticipated your class identity shifting later in your life, perhaps even knowing that you would be someone with a public profile?
Well, I really distinctly remember having a conversation in my auntie's living room when I was maybe like, I don't know, like 15 or something, and saying, I want to be like Sex and the City, you know, like I, you know, that there are people out there. And also, so this is the other thing as well that I've realized recently, that when we were growing up, right, I don't know about you, but I felt this sense of things were getting better, right? We were getting more rights and people were living longer and living standards were going up and more people were going to university. And I just always felt like, it was this upward, things are getting bit by bit by bit by bit by bit by bit by bit better. And then obviously the financial crash hit in 2008 and it was like, oh great, there's no future. And it just feels like things have got worse and worse and worse since then in many ways. But I had this very strong sense that I could do anything, you know, and that, well, I could go to London and I will have a book out and I'll mix with celebrities and politicians. And I didn't have any sort of like limitations. I was like, why can't I do that? And I, I remember saying to people, I want it all. I want to taste everything that life can offer. And I just always had this idea that I was going to be like this most important person ever, having this most fabulous life. And that's exactly what I did. No, joking aside, you know, but, and I don't know where I got that. I really don't know where I got that from, really. But I just always assumed that I would go and write for Vogue one day or do something like that. So it's weird. And I think, you know, one of the things of the book is escape. And one of the ways that I escaped was reading, and the other one was television, right? And I think I was very precocious from a young age. I think I realized quite early on, because I was, you know, very intelligent for a child. My dad would say this. He was like, you were just like, you know, from the age of 10, like you just run rings around adults kind of thing. And I must have honestly just been a nightmare. But I was so sure that, oh dear, I'm different. And that's going to be particularly difficult for me here in this town. And I remember seeing like people who lived differently on television, like people who lived in like houses with loads of books that spoke posher. And they seem to celebrate creativity and sensitivity more. It seemed to be a less violent world. And they seemed to go to universities like Cambridge and Oxford. And I didn't really understand class because I remember people saying, oh, you know, we live in a classless society now, which is ridiculous. But I desperately wanted to be middle class, desperately, because I just instinctively knew that my life would be easier without the extra layer of oppression and the sort of maybe, how can I say, not so sophisticated ideas that some of the people around me had when they were giving me a knuckle sandwich on the way home from school. Probably would have happened at boarding school, to be honest, but in my head, you know, there was this other world. I just think I was always meant to live my life in a very open way. And I think that comes from everybody in my hometown knowing who I was, you know, because I was so different and, you know, exotic to them.
I read your article for Vogue titled Visibility Isn't Enough. And in it, you write, as hostility against the trans community continues, sometimes I can't help dreaming about moving abroad and sidestepping these, in inverted commas, debates about what it means to be a woman, to simply go and be one. You seem to appear on TV debates less these days, and I'm assuming this is a conscious decision because it must have been super pressurizing and also really exhausting.
I think, you know, when I went on Question Time, like back in the day, so like I think the first time was like 2013. Number one, I was like really young and like working class. That was terrifying by itself. And then like being an openly trans person, I did feel this huge responsibility because at that time, there just simply weren't any trans people in the public eye that were in that sort of, I don't want to say not taken seriously because, you know, there'd been people like Nadia Ramada, who I just absolutely loved and still love and thought she was absolutely fantastic. But in terms of sort of like going on Newsnight or appearing in broadsheets and things like that. And so I felt this huge pressure, huge, 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 you know, because I was essentially the only person with a public profile at that time, you know, in that sort of space. And now, you know, we've got Laverne Cox, we've got loads of people here, you know, I don't feel like I need to get involved in every single debate because if I don't respond to it, other people will. And also life is short. I can't react to every single thing. And, you know, Renée Erdo-Lodge said, I always feel like I'm name dropping when I mention her, but she said to me the other week, you know, it's not natural to be in this state of fight or flight for your whole life. And, you know, that's how I got my public profile, is I wanted to speak up and I wanted to speak out against this stuff. But, you know, do I want to spend the rest of my life arguing with people? Not really, no. Arguing with old men on Newsnight. That comment that I'd made in the article is because I just got back from holiday. I'd literally just spent like a week like driving around Europe in a car with my friends, just having a really nice time and not even thinking or talking about being trans, and just going into Baker's and asking for bread and all the cakes and just eating all the cakes and going swimming in a lake and everything and just like forgetting that I'm trans. And then I come back to the UK and I log into my social media and it's like people are talking about, should I be allowed to use the toilets, or, you know, you're a this, you're a that, or you're, and I'm just like, I don't even, it's just so bizarre to me, because you know, touch wood, you know, I feel like I blend in, shall we say. I think passing is quite a problematic concept, but, you know, generally people, you know, I don't want to jinx myself, you know, go about my business, and people perceive me as a woman, right? So it's just weird to me, because I can't seem to go online without hearing that I'm basically a monster and the responsible for all of these problems in society. And I do just think, God, shall I just move to a different country and just never think about this ever again? Because why would you opt into it if you didn't have to? But obviously I'm not going to do that, and I have chosen to live my life publicly. And I just hope that by being honest, by hopefully being successful, so everybody go out and buy the book, please. Let's get me onto the top of the Sunday Times bestsellers list, because that would just end transphobia like that. Just showing people that I'm just a person. I'm just a nice person, hopefully. I'm not perfect, but maybe that will make some people think that what they're hearing about the big, bad transgender threat is not true.
Absolutely. Categorically, just not true. I heard you say in an interview that your life is 90% self-care. So tell me more about this statement, and perhaps the kind of things you do to make yourself feel better when you've had a bit of a bleh day.
I would just like to come out on this podcast. I am pizza sexual. I'm absolutely obsessed with pizza. I eat way too much pizza. I had a really horrible, horrible childhood and really horrible adolescence. And so I'm like, I need a sort of life version of a pizza. So I'm like, I need to have like the most fantastically luxurious, wonderful, fabulous life now to sort of counteract the crap at the beginning. And that's my sort of, I need to make my life so wonderful now that it tips the seesaw and the scales, that it's been like good overall. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Is that crazy? I feel like that's a really crazy, selfish, ridiculous thing to say, but
no, I think it's iconic.
One other thing that I'm really big on is a luxury candle. I knew you'd love this.
Which one? Tell me which one. Can you say which one? Are you affiliated with the brand?
Can I just say, I thought I was really fancy, right? Because I do love them. But I was obsessed with Diptyque for a bit. But I've recently discovered Sire Trudon.
Never heard of them. What is this?
I'm going to show you. Hang on one second.
It sounds like some kind of magic.
This is some good shit.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Look at this.
We've got gold and...
So they used to make candles for like the monarchy. Like it's one of the oldest candle makers in the world. And it's a Rolls Royce of candles. Like they just smell amazing. And, you know, I don't really drink now. So like I might crack one of these open, and they last as well. And you can use them, and I use them as makeup brush holders. And it's a little treat. And that's part of my self-care. And also the thing that you were saying before about, you know, the self-care thing, I got in trouble recently because Abigail Thorne, the YouTuber, who's fantastic, you know, does Philosophy Tube, does these great video essays. She said that when she met me, she had this cheap, fake YSL handbag, and I had the real thing. And all of these people were having a go and saying, oh yeah, you know, you capitalist, or, you know, oh, you think
did that's... you tweet this? I feel like I saw this on your Twitter or something.
I tweeted because I said, you know, I see these bishops coming, right? And then somebody else replied with like the perfect, which would have been a much funnier response. They said handbags at dawn. And I thought, oh, that's what you should have tweeted out, right? And I was thinking, hang on a minute, right? I don't, It's not a fucking car or a house, right? It's a handbag, and it's literally the most expensive thing that I own that I bought myself as a treat when I became a contributing editor for British Vogue, which was quite a big deal for me. And it's like, just, I don't have anything. Just let me have a bag. And actually, my socialism is that I want everybody to have a YSL handbag. So just let me, I don't own a home. I'm not likely to anytime soon. Let me have my fucking Cy Trudon candles and my YSL handbags, because honestly, it's self-care. Okay.
Let Paris's life be a pizza. Okay.
I would die on that hill. I swear, a YSL handbag is self-care.
Okay. Let us start to wrap up. I would love to do a quick fire with you. Is that okay?
Yeah, ask me anything. I've got no shame. Let's do it.
Quick fire with Paris. Breakfast, lunch or dinner?
Lunch.
Tea or biscuits?
Oh, tea. I'm a right tea belly.
Fish and chips or mushy peas with mint sauce?
Well, you see, mushy peas is very Nottingham. I'm gonna say fish and chips.
Gin and
tonic. Both. No, both. I want both. I refuse to choose. Both.
Gin and tonic or champagne?
Champagne.
Champagne or pizza?
Pizza.
Dress up or dress down?
I'll dress up.
Music festival or literary festival?
Literary festival. Come on.
All Saints or Sugar Babes?
All Saints.
Madonna or Moloko?
Oh, shit. Oh, I'm going to have to say Madonna, just because, like, she's just iconic. But I love Moloko.
Stay in or go out?
Usually I would say stay in, but I'm going to say go out. After a year of lockdown, I'm like, just take me dancing now.
Sunrise or sunset?
Sunset.
Routine or spontaneity?
Spontaneity.
And finally, early night or night owl?
Night owl.
I thought you'd say that. That was quickfire with Paris. Is there anything that you've read, listened to or watched recently that you can't stop thinking about, loved or would recommend?
I know I sound so pretentious, but like genuinely, I have become obsessed with French crime dramas, because, you know, like they always set them in like remote places, right?
I don't watch them, Paris. Like, I literally don't know.
Yeah, but you've watched quite. Yeah, but you've watched crime dramas in the UK, right?
Yes.
It's the same thing, except that it's like it's got the Alps in the background, like, or like the Ardennes, or like, you know, just gorgeous, like south of France. And I'm obsessed with it. And I think also I watch these things for escapism. And it just adds an extra layer of escapism, the fact that it's in a different country, but it's like kind of similar enough to us that it doesn't feel like completely, it feels familiar. And so I watched a show called The Chalet, and it started as this cascade. So I've been watching a show called Engrenage, which I think was called Spiral. They actually, BBC4 aired it. I've been watching, I've actually got like a Canal Plus subscription now. And it's like, there's loads of really good stuff that I wouldn't have seen otherwise. And there's some stuff on Netflix as well. So that's got English subtitles.
What would be your number one? And I'll watch it. I'll 100% watch it.
I'm going to say Engrenage. No, but okay, to start you off, that's hard because you have to pay for that on iTunes. I'm going to say I really enjoyed Zone Blanche on Netflix. I think it's called White Zone or Black Zone, Black Spot in English on Netflix.
I'm going to watch it.
So you can watch it today, yeah. Might not be your cup of tea, but it's a bit of a supernatural. It's a bit like Twin Peaks.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. If you like that, you'll like this. Yeah, it's cool.
Fantastic recommendation.
It's really dark as well. So let me know what you think of it.
If you could advise listeners to do or try one small thing today to help them find joy and dreaminess, what would it be?
Express gratitude to somebody that you are grateful for, but perhaps haven't told them recently, or maybe ever.
I love that. That's such a good one. And finally, I would love to know, what is one thing you hope your older self will have achieved?
I mean, I am my older self. I keep thinking what the person in this book would have made of me, because I just used to go out and take speed on Friday nights, and I'm more likely to have a bath with essential oils now. But older me, I think I would like some stability. I would like to own a house and somewhere that I can write books, and I would like to have contributed something meaningful to people's lives. And listen, I just think life is really hard for everybody. You know, whether you're whoever you are, you know, some days just getting out of bed is really difficult. And I think if you're dealing with other stuff on top of that, dealing with misogyny, you're dealing with transphobia, you're dealing with racism, all of these different things, it's like a lot of people are really struggling. A lot of people have a lot of trauma that they haven't been able to deal with. And if the energy that I put into the world, if my writing, my books, my ideas have helped anybody, you know, to find some joy and maybe some understanding and maybe some shared experience, I'll be very happy with that. Yeah.
Thank you so much. It's honestly just been such an honour to talk to you. I feel very, very, very lucky and very privileged.
Thank you so much for all your kind words. I really, really appreciate it. And it's so overwhelming. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode, and a huge thank you to Paris for coming on the show. Please do order yourself a copy of her book. You can find a link in the episode notes. And you can always share this episode on your Instagram stories, tagging me at Venetia Lamanna and tagging at ATST Podcast. See you next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.